surprising to think how just over 10 years ago it started as a much smaller group in a meeting room in Parliament House with, there were how many, 8, 10 of you? What was it like?
Well, I'm struggling to remember how many. I think about a dozen, but I remember getting a phone call from Dominic as well, and I think Russell Powell was there that day, and it essentially came from a challenge from the Transport Minister in New South Wales at the time, Bruce Baird, who essentially, to cut a long story short, said to Dominic, we as MPs meet together and pray regularly, why don't you guys do it? And I think probably our initial assessment was, well, who are we going to meet with? And he said, look, I'll organise a room at Parliament House and I'll put on breakfast for you if you can get the Christians in the media together. And when Dominic told me this, I thought, you know, the three of us might be having breakfast. I don't know any Christians in the media. And to Dominic's credit, the word went out and we had about a dozen or so. And from that meeting, look at the evidence is that in the room tonight. It's quite extraordinary. From 1989, I think that was, and now almost 20 years on, 19 years on, God's done extraordinary things out of one man's challenge and somebody else taking up the challenge. Yeah.
Thank you, Glenn. We're looking forward to what you've got to say, so I'll sit down.
Thanks, Evan. I guess the longer we work in the media, the more of life's lessons we learn. For me, it has been 26 years. Not the longest in the room. One of my early mentors, Russell Powell, is in the room. Must be much longer than 26 years.
Double that.
Double that, exactly. And I've learnt a lot over those 26 years, but the reality is I'm still learning. Lots. And there's a difficult balance, I think, we find ourselves in working in the media and being a Christian. Being a servant of the King, learning lessons from Christ and having to apply those in our sort of workplace. And also learning lessons from those people that are daily doing it in the media and applying that as well. When it comes to life's lessons, one fellow that was pretty good at it was Sir Donald Bradman, one of Australia's premier cricketer. Look at the figures, no one better. He was one that, particularly in the latter stages of his career, loved to teach life's lessons to those who would listen. And Dean Jones, a former Test cricketer, tells a great story of Don Bradman. During the 70s and 80s, the Adelaide Test match was on the Australia Day long weekend. And the players would all arrive several days before the Test match. And one of the things that they would do is they would play golf with Don Bradman. And this was sort of the thing to do in that week leading up to the Test match. And Dean Jones, in 1988, I think it was, Sir Donald Bradman was 80, got to play in his group at this game of golf before the Test match. And they were going round in groups of threes and fours. And this was just a great day for Dean Jones to play with Don Bradman. Don Bradman could still play golf pretty well at 80 years old. They got to the 18th hole that day, and Dean Jones was leading by 2 shots. And the competitive person that he was said, I'm going to beat Don Bradman at golf. They've got to the 18th at the Cooyonga course in Adelaide. It's a dogleg left, par 4. Big pine trees down the left-hand side. And Dino's teeing off first. And before he does, he turns to Sir Donald Bradman and says, Sir Don, when you were my age, what did you do? Did you lay it up on the elbow and drive it into the green, or did you go over the trees and go straight for the green? And Sir Donald Bradman said, just go over the trees. And Dean Jones, thinking, well, I'm not going to be beaten by Don Bradman, lines up the driver to go over the trees. Whooshka, out of the wood, gone. 3 off the tee, try again. Whooshka, gone. 5 off the tee. Thinks maybe I should lay up on the elbow, which he does. But by then, being 5 off the tee, Sir Donald Bradman pars the hole. He's way over. Sir Donald Bradman wins the game of golf that day. They get back to the clubhouse. And Dean Jones says to him, Sir Don, just take me back a bit there to the 18th. Did you really always go over the trees? And Sir Donald Bradman, in his wise way, walked over to him, put his hand on his shoulder and said, I did, Dino, but when I was your age, those trees were 4 foot high. Life's lessons. Tonight, a perspective on life's lessons from someone far greater than Sir Donald Bradman, and that's Christ. Getting a feeling for balancing working in the media with being a Christian. If we're honest, it's not easy. I don't want to overemphasize it because I think we get a bit too close to it. And it teaches us two really important lessons that are so applicable today. First thing I wanted to ask you, the question was, when was Jesus tempted? Matthew 4, interestingly, opens with the word then. You see it there at the front? Then Jesus was led by the Spirit into the desert to be tempted by the devil. Why then? Why was Jesus tempted on those three issues then? And to find the answer, we need to go back to the previous chapter, to chapter 3 and verse 16. The very preceding verse says this: as soon as Jesus was baptized, he went up out of the water. At that moment, heaven was open, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and lighting on him. And a voice from heaven said, "This is my Son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased." Then Jesus was led by the Spirit, etc. Jesus publicly identified with God his Father. He was publicly endorsed as God's Son. When was he tempted? Then. When we identify with Christ publicly in our workplace, through the media we work in, when are we going to be tempted? Then. The method, same as with Jesus. Physical appetite, social acclaim, material advancement. And the second question from that passage: why was Jesus tempted? Why was Jesus tempted then? Why was he a target? Because he was bad or sinful? He was targeted because he was important. Think about it in wartime. Where do planes drop their bombs in wars? Do they drop them in the open fields, over the ocean, into the forest land, into the mountains? Where do the bombs drop? On the airports, on the bridges, on the roads, on the communication towers. The targets are the vital ones. Jesus was a vital target. So I want to say tonight, if you're being tempted as a Christian in the media, it's not because you're bad or you're sinful, it's because you're important. The devil wants to get rid of that key target that's identified with Christ. That's you. So many of us get burdened and we get depressed by temptation. But do you know, the ones who should be burdened tonight are the ones who aren't being tempted. I just want to say it again so we're absolutely clear on it. If you're being tempted, it's not because you're bad or you're sinful, it's because you're important. And what I mean by that is you've identified with Jesus. You're no longer doing things the devil's way, you're doing things God's way. And if you're not being tempted in your workplace, if temptation isn't a struggle for you right now in the job that you're doing, you're not being overlooked, you know, because you're good. It's because you're useless. You're no longer a key target for the devil. Your Christian life has become so wishy-washy, the devil would be wasting his time. You're no longer a threat. He could leave you alone and it wouldn't do any damage to his agenda, in the media or through the media or in your personal life. Why did the devil target Jesus? Because he knew if Jesus gave in right then, the battle was over, wasn't it? Imagine if Jesus gave in on one of those three. We wouldn't be here tonight. The battle's over. Why is he targeting us? Why is Satan targeting us? Because as Christians, we're aligned with Jesus. We're working in the media. We're doing his work. We're speaking his word. And you know what? You're a threat and you're a nuisance. And it would be such a victory for Satan to win over you and take you out of your workplace and put you somewhere else. The tension we create, the temptation we face, and lastly tonight, the testimony we have. I wonder whether you ever feel like you're losing as a Christian. Do you ever think the message of Christ is lost in your workplace? You're the only one just hanging in there. As Christians, we often feel like we're in the minority. It feels like a losing battle. I recently heard a story of a preacher in the UK who was giving an evangelistic talk at his church, and as often happens, he'd gone a little too long and a member of the congregation had fallen asleep. The evangelist used a fairly recognised technique that night. He explained the gospel, he offered a challenge, and he asked those who wanted to commit their lives to Christ that night to put up their hand. A few people put up their hand, and at that point the man who'd nodded off woke up. And you know what it's like when you wake up and you think, gosh, I've been asleep. He's looked next to him and the man next to him had his hand up. So he thought, I better put my hand up as well. So he put his hand up. And then he started looking around the room and he realised not too many people had their hand up at all. And he said to the fellow next to him, I don't know what we're voting for, but I think we've lost. And he's right. But sometimes for us in our workplaces, in our jobs as Christians in the media, sometimes it feels like we've lost. We're on the losing side. And we don't claim the victory that we've heard about this weekend. So what are the practical things we can do in the workplace to make a difference? What are some of the practical things? And this is by no means the list, because I think there's lots of them. But I've just pick five. First up, can I encourage you to focus on Christ? If there are issues in your workplace, it will usually be about religion or church. They're good targets. Working on message, and it teaches us two really important lessons that are so applicable today. First thing I wanted to ask you, the question was, when was Jesus tempted? Matthew 4, interestingly, opens with the word then. You see it there at the front? Then Jesus was led by the Spirit into the desert to be tempted by the devil. Why then? Why was Jesus tempted on those three issues then? And to find the answer, we need to go back to the previous chapter, to chapter 3 and verse 16. The very preceding verse says this, as soon as Jesus was baptized, he went up out of the water. At that moment, heaven was open and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and lighting on him. And a voice from heaven said, this is my Son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased. Then Jesus was led by the Spirit, etc. Jesus publicly identified with God his Father. He was publicly endorsed as God's Son. When was he tempted? Then. When we identify with Christ publicly in our workplace, through the media we work in, when are we going to be tempted? Then. The method, same as with Jesus. Physical appetite, social acclaim, material advancement. And the second question from that passage, why was Jesus tempted? Why was Jesus tempted then? Why was he a target? Because he was bad or sinful? He was targeted because he was important. Think about it in wartime. Where do planes drop their bombs in wars? Do they drop them in the open fields, over the ocean, into the forest land, into the mountains? Where do the bombs drop? On the airports, on the bridges, on the roads, on the communication towers. The targets are the vital ones. Jesus was a vital target. So I want to say tonight, if you're being tempted as a Christian in the media, it's not because you're bad or you're sinful, it's because you're important. The devil wants to get rid of that key target that's identified with Christ. That's you. So many of us get burdened and we get depressed by temptation. But do you know, the ones who should be burdened tonight are the ones who aren't being tempted. I just want to say it again so we're absolutely clear on it. If you're being tempted, it's not because you're bad or you're sinful, it's because you're important. And what I mean by that is you've identified with Jesus. You're no longer doing things the devil's way, you're doing things God's way. And if you're not being tempted in your workplace, if temptation isn't a struggle for you right now in the job that you're doing, you're not being overlooked, you know, because you're good. It's because you're useless. You're no longer a key target for the devil. Your Christian life has become so wishy-washy, the devil would be wasting his time. You're no longer a threat. He could leave you alone and it wouldn't do any damage to his agenda, in the media or through the media or in your personal life. Why did the devil target Jesus? Because he knew if Jesus gave in right then, the battle was over, wasn't it? Imagine if Jesus gave in on one of those three. We wouldn't be here tonight. The battle's over. Why is he targeting us? Why is Satan targeting us? Because as Christians, we're aligned with Jesus. We're working in the media, we're doing his work, we're speaking his word, and you know what? You're a threat and you're a nuisance. And it would be such a victory for Satan to win over you and take you out of your workplace and put you somewhere else. The tension we create, the temptation we face, and lastly tonight, the testimony we have. I wonder whether you ever feel like you're losing as a Christian. Do you ever think the message of Christ is lost in your workplace? You're the only one just hanging in there. As Christians, we often feel like we're in the minority. It feels like a losing battle. I recently heard a story of a preacher in the UK who was giving an evangelistic talk at his church, and as often happens, he'd gone a little too long. And it teaches us two really important lessons that are so applicable today. First thing I wanted to ask you, the question was, when was Jesus tempted? Matthew 4, interestingly, opens with the word then. You see it there at the front? Then Jesus was led by the Spirit into the desert to be tempted by the devil. Why then? Why was Jesus tempted on those three issues then? And to find the answer, we need to go back to the previous chapter, to chapter 3 and verse 16. The very preceding verse says this: as soon as Jesus was baptized, he went up out of the water. At that moment, heaven was open, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and lighting on him. And a voice from heaven said, "This is my Son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased." Then Jesus was led by the Spirit, etc. Jesus publicly identified with God his Father. He was publicly endorsed as God's Son. When was he tempted? Then. When we identify with Christ publicly in our workplace, through the media we work in, when are we going to be tempted? Then. The method, same as with Jesus. Physical appetite, social acclaim, material advancement. And the second question from that passage, why was Jesus tempted? Why was Jesus tempted then? Why was he a target? Because he was bad or sinful? He was targeted because he was important. Think about it in wartime. Where do planes drop their bombs in wars? Do they drop them in the open fields, over the ocean, into the forest land, into the mountains? Where do the bombs drop? On the airports, on the bridges, on the roads, on the communication towers. The targets are the vital ones. Jesus was a vital target. So I want to say tonight, if you're being tempted as a Christian in the media, it's not because you're bad or you're sinful, it's because you're important. The devil wants to get rid of that key target that's identified with Christ. That's you. So many of us get burdened and we get depressed by temptation. But do you know, the ones who should be burdened tonight are the ones who aren't being tempted. I just want to say it again so we're absolutely clear on it. If you're being tempted, it's not because you're bad or you're sinful, it's because you're important. And what I mean by that is you've identified with Jesus. You're no longer doing things the devil's way, you're doing things God's way. And if you're not being tempted in your workplace, if temptation isn't a struggle for you right now in the job that you're doing, you're not being overlooked, you know, because you're good. It's because you're useless. You're no longer a key target for the devil. Your Christian life has become so wishy-washy, the devil would be wasting his time. You're no longer a threat. He could leave you alone and it wouldn't do any damage to his agenda. In the media or through the media or in your personal life. Why did the devil target Jesus? Because he knew if Jesus gave in right then, the battle was over, wasn't it? Imagine if Jesus gave in on one of those three. We wouldn't be here tonight. The battle's over. Why is he targeting us? Why is Satan targeting us? Because as Christians, we're aligned with Jesus. We're working in the media, we're doing his work, we're speaking his word, and you know what? You're a threat and you're a nuisance. And it would be such a victory for Satan to win over you and take you out of your workplace and put you somewhere else. The tension we create, the temptation we face, and lastly tonight, the testimony we have. I wonder whether you ever feel like you're losing as a Christian. Do you ever think the message of Christ is lost in your workplace? You're the only one just hanging in there. As Christians, we often feel like we're in the minority. It feels like a losing battle. I recently heard a story of a preacher in the UK who was giving an evangelistic talk at his church, and as often happens, he'd gone a little too long and a member of the congregation had fallen asleep. The evangelist used a fairly recognised technique that night. He explained the gospel, he offered a challenge, and he asked those who wanted to commit their lives to Christ that night to put up their hand. A few people put up their hand, and at that point, the man who'd nodded off woke up. And you know what it's like when you wake up and you think, gosh, I've been asleep. He's looked next to him, and the man next to him had his hand up. So he thought, I better put my hand up as well. So he put his hand up. And then he started looking around the room, and he realised not too many people had their hand up at all. And he said to the fellow next to him, I don't know what we're voting for, but I think we've lost. And he's right. But sometimes for us in our workplaces, in our jobs as Christians in the media, sometimes it feels like we've lost. We're on the losing side. And we don't claim the victory that we've heard about this weekend. So what are the practical things we can do in the workplace to make a difference? What are some of the practical things? And this is by no means the list, because I think there's lots of them. But I've just picked five. First up, can I encourage you to focus on Christ? If there are issues in your workplace, it will usually be about religion or church. They're good targets. Working on breakfast radio, as I do, the church is fair game. Christians are fair game. The double standards of both of those categories are fair game. I don't go and defend them. I turn the focus to Christ. forget about defending the church or religion. Turn their attention to Christ and get them to make a judgment there. Secondly, care for people. If you're in a position in your workplace, whether you're in management or it's a position of seniority, whatever it is, care for the people there. You know, the company you work for generally won't. Particularly, do it when you are in a position where you can execute or implement change for people. A point of difference. And amazingly, people will ask you why. I've worked at lots of different places. How come you took time to ask me how I was going or to follow me up with so-and-so? Just Christian care. The stuff we read that Christ did, took time to notice somebody weeping, somebody down and out, took time out of whatever he was doing to just cross the floor and say something, do something. We can do it as well. Thirdly, honesty in communication. We work in the communication business, yet we're so bad at doing it, aren't we, internally? I think in Sydney, for those of you that have travelled from overseas, let me give you the guidebook to Sydney, how you find out something about your media organisation. There are three ways to do it. The first is you buy the Daily Telegraph newspaper and you read the confidential column and you'll find out what's going on in your workplace. Secondly, you talk to colleagues that work at other media organisations because they'll know before you do. And thirdly, check the corridor gossip in your building. Probably the last option will be some formal announcement to actually properly announce what's going on. Honesty in communication. We can do better than that, can't we? As Christians in the media, we can do better in communication than the standard set by the workplaces we work in, particularly if we're in management. Ask yourself this: would I be happy if I was treated like that? Often the answer is no. Next one, take the opportunities. Publicly for me on breakfast radio, I'll be honest and say I find it very difficult sometimes. The issues that are thrown up on FM radio particularly, and when I worked at Today FM and Triple M, which are sort of teen rock stations, and they're at the loose end of the spectrum, I think it would be a good way to describe it. And there are issues thrown up at you live on radio that for some reason we'd like to get the newsreader's opinion, and for some reason I'd like to just confine it to their opinion in the studio, but that's not always the case. Recently, Janesy and Amanda, the two that I work with currently at the moment, were talking about Jesus before Easter this year. And I think it was the Wednesday before Easter. And essentially, they were implying on air that his death was a big mistake. It was a botch-up. And I'd finished the bulletin. I'm sitting there in the studio next door. I knew it was coming my way. And they asked me what I thought. Now, the thing about commercial radio, too, is you'll get all of 7 seconds to say it. There's not too much time. And I thought, what am I going to say? And I just said, no, it went exactly to plan. And Amanda Keller looked at me, and she said, how do you know that? And I said, because it's in the Old Testament. And Jonesy, good Catholic boy, knows his Bible, brought through Catholic schools. He knew what I was talking about. And the funny thing was that day, when I got back to the newsroom, I'd walked down from the news booth back to the newsroom, I had an email already on my computer from a listener. And she just said to me, this woman right out of the blue, I didn't know who she was, said, I didn't know you were a Christian, but I just wanted to say thank you for letting people know that Jesus' death wasn't a mistake. And I've got to say, I didn't plan that. It just happened. And the one thing I pray about is that God would give me the words sometimes in 5 second space to honour him. And I know that I don't always do that. And I know those opportunities come. And when it counts, you make a meal of it. But I know he forgives me for that too. Lastly, sharpen your character. Sharpen your character. We work in the media. It's a business which focuses on these things: image, skill, personality, doesn't it? Image. We're so concerned about how we look, how we sound. We promote image in our business. Print does it as well. Remember, the Sydney Morning Herald used to just be a staid paper with 8 columns. Oh, I've got to shake it out now so I can find the news. There's that much image in there, in the Herald these days. Skills, we spend so much time on skills. Go and do tertiary study, get some extra training. Skills, 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 we value them, we promote them. He's got the skills, he gets the job. Personality, we reward it. Oh yeah, they're bright and zany, they'll get that job. We encourage it. The one area, you know, we forget in the media is character. Christians in the media need character. You know what character is? It describes who you really are. What does image describe? Image describes how we look. What does skills describe? What we do. And what does personality describe? How we come across. Happy, sad, whatever. But the thing that really describes who we really are is character. And it's the thing for all of our training courses, for all of our schools and institutions and businesses, who's teaching character these days? What's character? One of the pastors at our church recently defined it this way, and I was hit between the eyes the night he spoke about it. He said, character is who you are when no one's watching. Character is how you treat a person when they can't offer you anything in return. And character is how you deal with temptation when you know you could get away with it. Character's built when times are tough, not when times are good. Romans 5:3 sums it up. One of my favourite verses in the Bible. We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know suffering produces perseverance and perseverance produces character. So, focus on Christ, care for people, honesty in communication, take the opportunities as they come to you and sharpen your character, sharpen our character. Let me close. 2 weeks ago tonight, one of the legends of rugby league passed away in Sydney. His name was Jack Gibson. Jack was, he was a good player, in fact he was a great player, played for his state in rugby league. He was an outstanding coach of rugby league teams. But more than that, he was an even better person. His funeral was the most amazing funeral. It didn't just draw people from rugby league. It drew people from the upper echelons of business, the down and outs. When Jack would often work and do jobs in the media, you know what he'd say? Don't worry about the check. Could you just send the check to this person? And we'd say, what? Just make out the check and he'd give you a name and an address to where to send it. And it was some person that was down and out and down on life, and Jack's fee for doing that media commitment would go there. The tributes have seemed to go on for a fortnight now. People are still talking about him. I recently read Jack's autobiography. It's called When All Is Said and Done, which pretty much sums him up. And it's full of little gems along the way. And he said this about coaching, and I thought I'd close on this tonight. He said, coaches who risk nothing, do nothing, have nothing, are nothing. They might avoid suffering and sorrow, but they cannot learn, feel, change. Chained by their attitudes, they are slaves. They've forfeited their freedom. Only a person who risks is free. And you know, it's the same for us as Christians in the media. It's risky. And I think we could rewrite the words this way for us as Christians in the media. Christians in the media who risk nothing, who fail to put Christ first, do nothing, have nothing, are nothing. We may avoid persecution and ridicule, but we become slaves to our jobs and we forfeit our freedom in Christ. Only a person who risks and serves Jesus is free. Folks, getting the balance right, the tension we create because we're Christians in the media, the temptation we face, the testimony that we have. What an exciting time it is to be a Christian in the media.